Welcome to the Walk On Mentality Podcast, where we discuss topics from walk-on stories and what it means to have a walk-on mentality, to entrepreneurship, to business, to fitness, mental health, and more. I'm your host, Jackson Mitchell, founder of Walk On Mentality Health, and I created this podcast to positively impact listeners through sharing inspirational stories and other thought-provoking content. If you enjoy the show, please share it with a friend. The goal is to positively impact as many people as possible. Thanks for tuning in. This episode of the Walk On Mentality Podcast is brought to you by Good Wolf Provisions. Are you ready to take your health and wellness journey to the next level? If so, look no further than Good Wolf Provisions, your partner in holistic, athletic nutrition. Good Wolf believes that true well-being encompasses more than just physical fitness. It's about nurturing your mind, body, and soul to achieve peak human performance. Their provisions range from the mushroom-powered Dawn Patrol superfoods, which go perfect in your morning coffee or post-workout smoothie, to whey protein, creatine, and even CoQ10 to help you stay focused and energized throughout the day. As part of the Walk On Mentality community, you get an exclusive perk. Head over to goodwolfprovisions.com to explore their offerings and treat yourself to a healthier journey. Use code MENTALITY at checkout and you'll unlock a fantastic 15% off your order. Thanks for supporting the podcast, and I can't wait to hear what you think about the supplements. Remember, no limits. If you're like me, you like to train hard. And if you train hard, it's incredibly important that you take the time to prioritize rest and recovery so that you can come back better. And one of the ways I set myself up to come back better is by rocking the Kane Revive. The Kane Revive is designed to stimulate recovery from the ground up, created for moments of athletic transition, made to support and renew the feet before and after workouts. Kane is made with Bounce Back Foam, a breakthrough biofoam created from sustainable Brazilian sugar cane. The shoes are odor and bacteria resistant, quick drying, and ultra durable. They were developed in partnership with Dr. Daniel Geller, an authority in the treatment of foot and ankle injuries in elite runners, cyclists, and triathletes. Head to the link in the show notes to support the Walk On Mentality podcast and get yourself a pair. Come back better. Are you tired of feeling like your clothes are too tight, uncomfortable, or never your size? What about feeling like you never have the right apparel for the various occasions that you're doing on a month-to-month basis? At the end of the day, you look good, you feel good, and you feel good, you play good. And that's in every area of your life. And if that resonates with you, look no further. I'd like to introduce you to the Roan Commuter Collection. Roan's Commuter Collection is flexible and breathable. There's a product for every occasion. Mobility is everything, and it makes looking good easy. Not to mention, with Gold Fusion anti-odor technology, you never have to worry about your pits reeking. If any of that resonated with you, then my friend, you are in the right place. The Commuter Collection can get you through any workday and straight into whatever comes next. So head to roan.com/mentality and use promo code MENTALITY to save 20% off your entire order. That's 20% off your entire order when you head to roane.com/mentality and use code MENTALITY. It's time to find your office comfort. What's going on, Nick? How are you?
I'm doing well. Hopefully you had a nice Friday.
Yes. Fantastic. Happy Friday indeed.
Yeah. Good stuff. My wife's excited for me to finish up the day. This is my last call.
Yeah. Has it been a busy one?
Yeah, but in a good way. Yeah. Same with yesterday, but it's been a good couple of days, man.
Good. Do you guys have anything special planned for the holiday weekend?
Nope. My dad's birthday was Wednesday, so I suppose on Sunday we're going over to their house and they've got a pool and my dog loves to swim around and get everybody wet. And so we're gonna do a little birthday dinner with him, but I think that's it.
Very
nice.
It's
gonna be a nice kind of relaxed weekend. Maybe we'll go to the gym.
Yeah. Kind of thing. Yeah, I certainly value the chill, relaxing weekends now more than probably ever. So that sounds nice.
Yeah, me too.
Well, man, I appreciate you joining me this afternoon, this evening. And I'm excited to get into your background and story. And so without further ado, man, I mean, tell the listeners just a little bit about Nick Hutchinson and what Book Thinkers is.
Sure. I'd like to start off by saying that one of my core beliefs is that the right book at the right time can change somebody's life. So that's going to be sort of the anchor for today's conversation, I'd imagine. As you mentioned, my name is Nick Hutchinson. I grew up in the Boston, Massachusetts area. I was not much of a reader growing up. I embodied more of the jock stereotype. I loved playing football. I was captain of the wrestling team. And I never really loved the classroom. I wasn't a great student, and that kind of transitioned into college with me. I enjoyed playing basketball, hitting the gym. I enjoyed the dining hall, hanging out with my friends, but not really the classroom. At the same time, I did want to be successful after school. And so, although I wasn't much of a reader growing up, I fell head over heels with the personal development industry in my early 20s. And from there, I built a company called Bookthinkers that serves about 1 to 200 authors a year. We help authors promote and market their books. And yeah, that's kind of a light intro as to who I am and some of the things that I care about.
Yeah, and we briefly chatted the other day, but remind me again, where are you from, and were you surrounded by a lot of athletics, and did you have siblings that were involved in athletics? Like, did you just come up in a competitive environment growing up, or you kind of mentioned this jock that you leaned into, but I guess what I'm really asking is, what were the roots of this kind of jock version of Nick?
Yeah, good question. So yeah, Boston, Massachusetts, or just south of Boston, Massachusetts is where I grew up. And I did. I'm the oldest of four boys, and so we had a very competitive household. We all played sports growing up. We all played baseball and soccer. We all got into basketball at a pretty young age. I grew up in a house where my dad loved the Boston Celtics. He loved the Boston Red Sox. He loved the New England Patriots. Those were probably the three sports that we paid the most attention to. And even growing up, I mean, the basement of their house was sort of like a man cave with sports memorabilia all over the walls. And so, naturally, being the oldest of four boys, I turned everything I could into a competition, sometimes at the expense of everybody else around me, but I definitely had that competitive drive. And so, all my friends played sports. I think that's where I developed all of my early friendships. And, my parents were always at the games and stuff like that. So, yeah, I think from a very early place, it was in my blood, that's for sure.
Yeah, and then kind of growing up through the ranks, you mentioned football, wrestling team captain. Did you go on to play at the collegiate level as well, or did you stop after high school and then, go on to the next thing?
When I was younger, I always wanted to play sports in college, and I had a couple of opportunities too. But my senior year of football, I tore the AC joint in my left shoulder and then transitioned into wrestling season, and it never really healed. In fact, it got a lot worse. And I think by the time that high school was coming to an end and you started really picking colleges and committing to colleges and stuff like that, I wasn't even thinking about sports anymore. So I did a little bit of like Brazilian jiu-jitsu once I graduated high school, and I stayed in the gym and playing basketball and stuff while I was in college. But no, I sort of transitioned more into the world of business. And my freshman and sophomore years at college, I actually ran a house painting business for a couple of summers. I went door to door. I built up that business. I hired a bunch of my friends and we made a bunch of money. So that was a lot of fun. And once I got a taste for business and sort of applied the competitive nature that I had to that world, it was sort of a new opportunity for me.
Yeah, and game over a little Did you now what were you studying? Did you know that, being an entrepreneur was something that was at the forefront of what you wanted to do? Or did you, like me, study economics and think that you wanted to join a company and stay there for, 1,000 years?
Well, growing up, my mom had a still has a pretty successful career in the retail management space, and my dad has always been in footwear and apparel, like athletic footwear and apparel sales. So my dad had a sales background, my mom had a management background. I knew I wanted to work in the world of business. So I started as an undeclared business major, just sort of figuring out what I wanted to specialize in. And after running my own house painting business that first summer, I knew that I wanted to be in the world of marketing and sales because I did grow up actually with a lot of social anxiety. I had a lot of fear of what other people thought of me, and I couldn't present very well or communicate very well in front of a classroom. But by the end of knocking on thousands of doors, I actually found that that's the area of business that I found the most enjoyment in, like competing against the other people running house painting businesses at school. And seeing what I could do, So it was a lot of fun, and found that that was kind of where I wanted to spend more of my time.
How important has it been in your journey to, kind of identify those fears, if you will, the social anxiety or whatever it may be, and address those fears through actually like leaning harder into what they are?
Yeah, I think it's incredibly important. I think, you know, there are so many quotes about embracing discomfort, living outside of your comfort zone. I've always found that by growing slowly and consistently pushing the agenda, I've been able to sustainably play on the edge of my comfort zone and the discomfort. And that's a really healthy place. I think sometimes people embrace too much discomfort and they crash and they burn and they end up going back into their comfort zone. And then obviously sometimes people, they're running the other direction of the fear and they kind of sit too far in their comfort zone. So it's a really interesting concept. I like to play right at the edge.
Yeah. I like that. It's certainly a difficult balance to find, but one, once you find it, I think you can kind of thrive a little bit.
Yeah, I think so too. And to address some of the things that I was dealing with, I mean, by late teens, early 20s, I had developed a little bit of an ego on sort of one side of the spectrum that would represent itself at the expense of other people. So I probably wasn't a lot of fun to be around. but on the other side, like I had all these insecurities in front of large groups of people. And I had a lot of really crazy fears. I mean, I've heard that more people are scared of public speaking than they are of dying. And so, you know, there are a couple of horror stories that I think shaped my fear of public speaking pretty early on. So yeah, it was a little bit of a confusing place to be. And mm-hmm. So addressing my ego and addressing the insecurities in my early 20s have paid dividends. And yeah, it did require a lot of embracing discomfort.
Yeah, I was going to ask, I mean, how did you kind of get that awareness of like, these are things that I need to address? And what was the actual process of addressing them like for you?
Well, going into my senior year, so skipping ahead a couple of years, I took an internship at a local software company and it was a sales internship. And my boss, the sales director, very quickly introduced me to the world of personal development podcasts. I think he probably recognized some opportunities for improvement and essentially said, hey man, you're spending so much time in the car driving to and from, you should check these out. So I started to listen to a lot of these conversations. And prior to that, I thought successful people, they didn't talk about their weaknesses or vulnerabilities. And so once I started to listen to all of these people, they all had that same kind of like story arc, the hero's mm-hmm. journey. They had to embrace discomfort and go face to face with some of their issues, become more aware of them. And so there were tons of exercises in the early books that I read that helped me to become a little bit more aware. In fact, early in my journey, I read a book called The Code of the Extraordinary Mind by Vishen Lakhiani. I'm just remembering this for the first time in a while. And one of the calls to action in that book is to write a text message or a letter to friends and family and have them describe your biggest weaknesses to you. And that was a terrifying idea because part of my insecurity was around like maintaining this perfect version of who I was. And so, yeah, I sent out text messages, Facebook messages, some phone calls, and it was a very, very difficult process to hear what everybody had to say. But that's the first step of awareness. I think, you know, sometimes we have a very distorted view of ourselves and we need to hear it from other people to sort of get smacked around a little bit and understand what their version of you looks like.
Wow. That talk about discomfort. I mean, I could so relate to this feeling of for a very long time needing to uphold this image that, like, quite frankly, it's this image that you create of yourself from the perspective of someone else. And you're like, they think this about me, so I need to be whatever that is. And yes, it's unsustainable to try to be that. Like, it's not. And also the other thing is nobody actually is expecting that of you or probably thinks that of you. That's yeah, an incredibly powerful
Nobody
powerful
cares.
Books. Yeah, yeah.
Nobody cares. You know, I used to think about sitting in the dining hall alone. I used to be terrified of that for some reason. And I remember reading like a couple of years later, an example where an author talks about that. And he's like, you know, thinking back, I never looked at anybody else to see if they were eating alone. Why would anybody be looking at me? Like, it was just such a goofy idea. So yeah, I can totally, obviously, I could totally resonate with what you're saying too.
Yeah. So you take this sales internship, you start going down the path of personal development. Talk to me a little bit more about that role and that job and what that experience was like for you working in sales. And remind me, so you were 20 at that time?
Yeah, I think I was 20. And so I found this internship in kind of a fun way. I haven't told this story on a podcast either, but I went to the career fair at our college, and there were probably 100 companies representing themselves. And I really went just to see what else was out there. I mean, I was running my own house painting businesses, and I wasn't sure if I really needed to go out there and experience somebody else's company or if I wanted to continue to build my own. And I was waiting for one of my friends who was a software coding guy and a computer engineer, software engineer. And he was talking to this software company. And I was just kind of hanging out on the side, waiting for him to finish up so that we could continue going to other booths. And I just struck up a conversation with somebody else who was hanging, 20 feet away, 30 feet away. And he asked me about myself. He was a little bit older than college age. And he asked me about myself, and I told him about my experience running the house painting businesses and stuff and door-to-door sales. And he said, "Well, I actually own that company over there. I'm just here to sort of observe and see how my employees are doing." And he said, "I'd like to hire you. What do you cost?" And I told him what I wanted. Yeah, I just sort of made it up. And he said, "Sure." And I said, "Well, what will I be doing?" And he's like, "Well, we don't have a business development representative in our company that would be doing what you're doing, but we'll figure it out." So what was nice about a small business is sometimes you're thrown, I mean, they probably had about 50 employees, but you're thrown into the lion's pit. And you just got to figure out what to do, how to provide value, how to survive. And so it was a really fun environment to start to learn about selling because I was on my own most of the time. And the guy that introduced me to the world of podcasting, his name was Kyle. If he was on this show, he'd kind of laugh about it today, but he didn't really want me in the business. I think he looked at me as somebody who he was grooming to compete with him as sort of an outside sales rep. And so I didn't have a ton of responsibility. And one day I went to my local Barnes and Noble and I got a bunch of the books that I had been hearing about in these podcasts. And I had to clock in and out. The director of finance over there, Tyler, he was a stickler for showing up on time and leaving on time as well. And I was sort of paid an hourly rate plus commissions. And so I'd close my office door and I'd read for like 3, 4 hours a day, which was because I didn't have a ton of responsibilities. And there was only so much that I could do above and beyond what they asked me to without getting weird. So yeah, I got to read a lot. But as far as sales and communications go, I learned so much and I continued with them after college for 4 or 5 years as well.
Now, you were selling software. Was that a, what was kind of your motivation for that job? Was it that you actually enjoyed it and you enjoyed the process of selling and building relationships with prospects? Or was it, this is going to be something I do for a period of time before I eventually go back into being an entrepreneur full time? What was that work for you?
It was more of the latter. I knew that I needed to mature a lot more as a sales professional in order to successfully grow my own business. And so as BookThinkers started, I remember watching a Gary Vee video where he says, if you want to start a side hustle, make sure your full-time job supports that side hustle. Like there's a skills transfer between them. And so yeah, it was a small business. I got to sit in and learn how a small business works and operates. I got to sit in on a lot of things that I would not have been able to if I took a job at a big company, where I'd be getting coffee for somebody for a few years. Like I was in these conversations very early on. And I was learning all about sales, marketing, effective communication, prospecting, flying out, hosting sales presentations every week. I mean, I flew hundreds of times for that company all over the place, presenting all over the place, hosting booths at trade shows, and all of that skill development could transfer directly into the side hustle that I was building. And so I was very clear with everybody at that job that I wanted to start my own business one day. And I didn't know if that would be 2 years, 5 years, 20 years, but I sort of like claimed that I wasn't very employable. And so I would always try to operate a little bit outside of the guidelines and stuff like that, just to make sure everybody remembered that I'm not here forever. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So you knew that it was there was value in that chapter, but ultimately you had a goal in mind that you were still working toward.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that sometimes people jump ship a little bit too early. You know, I still had a lot to learn. I was still very new in this world of business. And so I'm so thankful when I look back to that opportunity and to the 5 or 6 years, I guess, that I spent there. Such an amazing group of people and really an important piece of my story as well.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit more about, this process of building this side hustle. I mean, when you first got started on BookThinkers, what was the vision? And as time has passed and as you've been building, how has that evolved and changed?
BookThinkers started as an idea while I was still in school. So I had just started reading going into my senior year. I was crushing a bunch of books. And one of my friends, Alec, and I, we would meet on basically a weekly basis in one of those kind of university conference rooms where there were whiteboards and markers and paper and stuff like that. And we'd meet on a weekly basis, typically on the weekends, and we would just talk about starting businesses. He ran his own house painting business as well, in New Hampshire. I was in Massachusetts. And we had, a lot of similar interests in starting businesses when we graduated. So we'd meet on a weekly basis and we'd always write down the problems that we'd encountered. BookThinkers was not the first problem that we wanted to address, but once I started reading and talking about all of these books so frequently, social media, personally with my family and stuff, I got to re well, I ended up receiving a lot of very similar inquiries. So people would ask me the same questions over and over and over again. What was your biggest takeaway from this? Or what's your favorite book in this subject? And so I decided one week, I was just like, hey, Alec, I'm tired of answering the same questions every week. Like maybe we could build a website where we categorize our favorite takeaways from the books that we're reading. And then we can also go back and review these intentions consistently. So that was kind of version one of BookThinkers, and that really didn't take place until after graduation, and we decided to start building that website. And then I brought my friend Derek in,
So
who's a
what year was
hometown
that?
buddy.
Sorry to
I
cut you off.
graduated in, oh yeah, no problem. I graduated college in May of 2016, and
Okay.
then we took the rest of 2016 to kind of flesh that idea out, and we incorporated the business in the state of Massachusetts, January of 2017.
Okay.
So yeah, it was probably like a 9 month process, 6 month process of just kind of meeting and talking about it before we decided, like, hey, we have a name, we have a domain, let's go get a logo and let's try to put this thing up.
Yeah. So I'll let you continue. So as it started, it is this website where you're sharing, I guess, probably blog format reviews of books and what your big takeaways were.
Yep, exactly. And then very quickly, right around the same time, I had coffee with a childhood friend of mine named Derek. And Derek says, hey, dude, I think we could turn this into a mobile application, something that readers could download, categorize their favorite takeaways from the books they're reading, connect with other readers, check out their favorite takeaways. Maybe we build a news feed of just a reading related content. And so we decided to try to build that. We brought on a company in Argentina to build that first mobile application. And throughout 2017 and a little bit of 2018, we worked on that project. I kept the full-time job and I'm working on this side hustle. Now, long story short, this mobile application never takes off. The company in Argentina kind of falls apart. We decide not to pick up the pieces and just let that vision die. But what was interesting was late 2017, early 2018, I start building an audience on social media in anticipation of launching this mobile application. And so, although the mobile app was unsuccessful, and Derek and Alec decided to take a step away from the business after we sort of failed at that, I was left with this audience that I was engaging with on a daily basis. I was posting mainly on Instagram and Facebook the books that I was reading. And yeah, that community started to grow. So, that was kind of like the first iteration that didn't work out, but what did work out was the social following.
Okay. So app falls through. It's 2018. You got a social media following that you're building. Up to that point, did you feel like you'd faced a lot of challenges, or did you feel like we're just kind of figuring out what's working, like throwing darts at the board and seeing what sticks?
I feel like we faced a lot of challenges when you're young. and blissfully ignorant. You yeah. think, oh, I'm going to build this. Everybody's going to want it. We're going to make a ton of money. It's going to happen really fast. And then you find out when you're building a business with other people, not everybody sees things the same way that you do. And so there's a little bit of partnership and decision-making, failure, but then learning. Mm-hmm. And then at the same time, I mean, we lost a lot of money in the first versions of this website and mobile application. And so I think it was really important that I kept the full-time job because, you know, I'm a recent college graduate. I'm making a decent amount of money in this sales position, but I'm also losing a decent amount of money in my entrepreneurship activities, my side hustle. And so I think a lot of people probably looked at that like, what the heck are you doing?
Right. So keep walking me through the process of building it. I mean, you know, so many people want to build a business. They want to build something that's their own, but they're so hesitant. And especially to your point, like whether you face a challenge that's a little uncomfortable and you lose some money and then it's like, all right, never mind, I'm not doing this. Or whether you know, there are all these reasons to not, but you believed in this idea and you wanted to, you know, pivot at that point to make it something a little bit different, obviously, as we've gotten to where it's at now. So keep walking me through the process of the continued growth.
Yeah, so I'm left with this social media following and I'm continuing to post content. And I think the reason that I never let it die was because I was connected to a purpose. Like these books had dramatically changed my life in a very short period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And so as I was growing this community and networking with like-minded people on Instagram and Facebook, people would reach out. They'd ask for book recommendations. I'd provide a recommendation from a book that I've read. They'd come back and say, hey, Nick, this changed my life. Like, thank you so much. And I didn't have the language at the time to realize that I was starting to connect to my purpose. Mm-hmm. You know, oftentimes you'll hear your purpose comes from your pain. It's a line from Evan Carmichael. And books solved a lot of pain for me. I didn't realize I was helping other people do the same thing yet, but I knew that it felt good. Like I was shifting from focused on ego and myself to focused on serving other people. Mm-hmm. And as the social media audience started to grow, authors would reach out every so often and they'd say, hey, Nick, I'm putting out a book, or I just put out a book, and I think my target reader is your audience. I'd love to pay for a book review. Yeah. And so this was this new idea of monetization. I could get paid to review books, something that I'm literally doing for free.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of the first successful monetization opportunity. And I would finish those engagements by asking my author clients, like, hey, is there anything else that I can help with? I'm willing to try it for free. I'm willing to try all sorts of things related to social media, content creation, podcast booking, like you name it. I want to help you sell books and figure this thing out because right. It's kind of the wild, wild west in the world of book sales. Nobody really knows what they're doing. And so, yeah, that was kind of right. Like the next step on the ladder.
When you say it's the wild, wild west in book sales, I would love for you to expand on that because I think a common misconception, maybe it's not a common misconception, but I know certainly at a point in my life, I thought, oh, you write a book and then you sell kajillion copies and you're loaded. I know that that is very much not how it goes. So when you say, you know, helping authors do that thing, tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, I started to realize that it must not be a very easy thing to do because all of these authors would come to me and they would say, you know, when I started to get on calls and do a little bit more discovery with authors that wanted to promote their books, I learned that most of the time, an author writes a book because they've lived decades of experience and they've focused on one specific skill set or a series of skill sets and lessons. And they might sell their business. They might retire from a corporate job. They might be semi-retired and they'll want to write a book. They want to give back. They want to detail what they went through. They want to save people time and money. And so they would write the book and then they'd go to put it out and nobody would buy it. Nobody would buy it because there are somewhere between 600,000 and 1 million new books released in the United States every single year. That's a lot of books.
Wow. Yeah.
And the average book sells 100 copies in the first 12 months. So wow. It's a very small amount. And that average includes the people that sell millions of books. So almost nobody is buying these books. And that's a painful thing to go through as an author because you lived decades of experience, and then you probably spent somewhere between a year to a few years writing it down, and then you put it out and nobody buys it. I mean, what a tough experience to go through. And so people would come to us and they'd say, please help. I need to sell some books. I need to feel like my time was worth it.
And so what exactly is the service that you offer with regard to that?
So today, BookThinkers offers three core services. Number one, we do book reviews. So we still work with authors to promote and market their books through our social media channels. We have about 150,000 followers on Instagram, a very engaged community of nonfiction readers looking for a new book recommendation every day, and a bunch of followers on the other platforms too. So we'll review books for authors. Number two, we do podcast booking. So we will actually place an author on anywhere between 5 to 100 podcasts to talk about their book and to share their message. And if the author uses their book as a business card, meaning they have some sort of complimentary product or service like coaching, consulting, speaking, maybe some type of actual product or service other than that. If the book is a business card for one of those services, they can make a lot of money through the selling of their books. It's not from the books themselves, but it's by getting people introduced to their world. And podcasting is a great opportunity to talk long form about the books, but also the services. I mean, I guess kind of like we're doing right now. And then the third thing that we do is short form video production. So we will fly out to an author and help them turn a physical book into 50 to 100 pieces of short form video content. Think Instagram Reels, TikTok, YouTube Shorts that captures attention, talks about the book, and then has a call to action focusing on the book or those other complimentary products or services that they have in their universe. And so these videos are very professional. We do captions, background music, animations, and these videos have viral potential. So authors can build their audience and connect with their fans and sell stuff at the same time. So that's kind of what we've worked ourselves into today. And we have 10 people on our team. We work, like I said, with a couple hundred authors a year typically. And so now we're serving our people.
Man, that's really, really cool. Really cool. So we kind of talked about 2017, 2018, the changes. At what point did that full scale shift happen when you started doing all three of those service lines?
2019, I partnered with a guy named Ryan to build another mobile application while I was working on some of these book promo services. I wanted to take another stab at it. Long story short, it didn't work out again. We tried some other forms of monetization as well. We tried some masterminds, some book projects, some event-related stuff. We even sold a little bit of merchandise. None of it worked. And the only consistent theme was that these services for social media and authors, they were continuing to grow. So I like to say that BookThinkers is 10 businesses in one. Nine of them failed, one of them succeeded, which is the digital marketing agency piece of things. And so Ryan is no longer an active part of the day-to-day BookThinkers business either. He decided to take a step away, I believe, beginning of 2021. So we worked together for a couple of years. And I learned a lot from him. Great person. Just not the right time for us to work together within the world of BookThinkers either. Learned a lot about partnership management and working with other people too. So now we're in 2021, and these services are really starting to grow. And I thought about taking a step away from my full-time job. And thankfully, the business had just been acquired again, and the new boss that sort of purchased our company, I knew him a little bit just from the industry. And he said to me, thankfully, I owe him a lot. He said to me, hey, Nick, no need to take a step away. Why don't we work to automate much of your responsibilities so that you can only work 5 hours a week, 10 hours a week, do what you need to do to kind of get by, really go full time into BookThinkers, keep your base salary, your health benefits and stuff. So that if things don't work out with your side hustle, this business BookThinkers, you can always just transition back into the business. And how cool is that? Super lucky.
What?
Yeah, super lucky. Larry and I owe a lot to Larry. Larry and I had it out a few times. And so I think we had a lot of respect for each other. And I think that, you know, I was a top performing sales guy at a company that they had just acquired, and I was trying to step away. And I don't think he wanted to ruffle any feathers with, you know, the VC that was backing him, the money people.
Right.
And so, you know, this is a big business all of a sudden. Like the business that he built had hundreds of employees, and he just wanted to keep me around. I had sort of a book of business, a network of relationships. And so I could do what I used to do in 40 hours a week and 5 to 10 hours a week.
Right.
So this is a different, I feel like this is unique to my story in that by the time I transitioned, which was at full time officially, which was actually earlier this year, 2023, BookThinkers already had a handful of full time employees.
Wow.
So I had my side hustle was employing people while I was still employed at another company. And that was always a little confusing. And I think I had a lot of insecurity around that actually, because I'd be interviewed on a show and people would call me an entrepreneur, a founder, a CEO. I would network with people, you know, hey, when to take that jump? Well, you know, I never actually took the jump myself. Like, what do you mean? You employ people. So
right.
It was kind of a weird, it was weird for sure. But yeah, made that official transition once that company got acquired by a publicly traded company, the conglomerate.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, you know what? Now is my time, I think, to step away.
Yeah.
I don't want to be involved in a publicly traded company while owning my own business on the side, you know?
Yeah, man, it is wild to hear you say that you were fully employed while employing people, because as you were talking, my next question that popped into my mind was like, you know, when do you take the jump, and did you have any hesitancy or fear around taking that jump? And I still have the same question, but it's just really interesting knowing that, like, hey, this is a sustaining, functioning business at the time that you really stepped all the way into it. So what was that process like after the acquisition and it becoming a publicly traded company to actually say, all right, hey, appreciate it, it's been real, but I'm out?
Yeah, you know, way earlier in my journey, I met a guy named Kevin Horsley. Kevin has been a mentor of mine ever since. In fact, we still meet on a weekly basis today. So it's been years and years and years and years. And super early in my journey, I wanted to take the jump. And Kevin said something to me like, hey, Nick, appreciate your desire to build this business. But you need to understand that if you jump without building the parachute first, meaning building an emergency fund, a nest egg, whatever, he's like, you're going to operate from a place of scarcity. That will bleed into your decision making. You'll compromise on your values. Don't do that. He said 95% of small businesses fail in the first 5 years. That's a Michael Gerber thing, because entrepreneurs jump too soon. And so that stuck in my head forever. And it's the reason that I decided to stick around so much. And yeah, there was a lot of strange feeling around it. I mean, on one hand, I had automated this set of responsibilities to 5 or 10 hours a week. And so per hour, I'm getting paid a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And that money is being used. You know, this year I got married. We went on a honeymoon. We bought a house last year. Like, that money had utility for us. It wasn't
right.
All just sitting in a savings account or anything. There's a really cool story. It'll take me 2 minutes to explain it. But earlier this year, that company is going through the acquisition, getting acquired by a publicly traded company. I'm deciding whether or not it's time to make the jump. And I'm at an author's house in LA, outside of LA, Stephen Pressfield. He's the author of a bunch of books, including The War of Art. So I'm hanging out with Stephen, and he told me that for his entire life, he's paid a lot of attention to omens, signs, things like finding a penny on the ground face up. That means it's going to be the best day ever. Those types of things.
Mm-hmm.
Karma. And he told me the story, and I thought that was pretty cool. And, you know, I went on the rest of my day. We actually got to film with Lewis Howes and spend 4 or 5 hours with him. He broke down the BookThinkers business, gave me a bunch of advice. I love that guy. Did some other cool things that day. And I remember I was walking around that night at the hotel. I was doing 75 hard. So I had to have 2 45-minute workouts a day. And I was doing my outdoor walk for my second workout. And I had an employee of Bookfinkers with me, Luke. And Luke's kind of like our operations manager. And I was walking through the pros and cons of making the jump at the time. And I literally said out loud, we're on our third lap around this little area. I literally said out loud, like, I don't know, maybe I need like a sign or something.
Yeah.
And that same minute, I look down and there's a penny on the ground, heads up. And what's funny about that, and I still have that today, it's over here. But what's funny about that moment was that, number one, we had walked around it three times and I didn't see the penny the first couple of times. Mm-hmm. And then number two, like Stephen Pressfield had had that conversation with me that morning. And so I picked up the penny, it was heads up. And I'm like, all right, Monday morning, I'm officially turning in my resignation. So yeah. That's the kind of long story short version of it. It was a really cool moment for me. And yeah, I reached out. I said, hey, I appreciate everything you guys have done for me. I think it's time to leave. They said, okay, how much time do you want before you leave? And I said, I don't know, what's fair for me to transition everything out, a few weeks? They said, yes. And so I just offboarded like 5-6 years of knowledge and CRM data and email and existing opportunities to somebody else on the team, and then done, which was kind of strange, you know, not to have to manage multiple calendars anymore, because that was the hardest part of like running two full-time business jobs at the same time.
Yeah.
Was that I had to make sure they never competed with each other, but I could never integrate calendar softwares together because I didn't own the other one. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, I mean, but was it difficult? Was it, I'm trying to think of the right kind of word to maybe describe a feeling that could have been felt. I mean, again, I think it's a little bit different, and you've said this because your situation was unique in having a business that employed people, but like, you know, a lot of people talking about making that jump, there is a level of uncertainty that exists, and there is a level of like stepping into the unknown a little bit. So maybe you didn't have exactly that, but were there any feelings of like, oh, I don't know if this is the right thing?
I think it's Tim Ferriss. He's one of my favorite podcasters. I think he always tries to run through this fear setting framework where you ask the question, what's the worst case scenario here? And the worst case scenario that I could possibly think of was that it all fails. It goes to zero. The business claims bankruptcy and I go back to my full-time job. I mean, I have loving and supporting parents. If I needed to go back and back in my childhood room or something, like the worst case scenario wasn't that bad.
Right.
And so I think that helped me remove a little bit of risk. Another thing, like I found myself saying this recently, that no matter how many times you read Aesop's fable, The Tortoise and the Hare, the tortoise always wins. And I was the tortoise, man. Like how much longer could you possibly wait? How much more of a foundation could you possibly have before starting your own business?
Right.
And so I think like it was energizing more than anything. I think I felt a weight off of my shoulders. And I was just ready to go.
Yeah.
So it felt really good. I mean, I had been toying with it for years. I had tried once to already leave and it didn't work. So
Right. Yeah,
that's kind of where I was at.
That's awesome. So let's talk a little bit more now about, you know, what are some of your favorite books? What are some of your kind of key lessons that you've taken away from the books that you've read? And also, I'm just curious, you know, off the top of your head, how many books have you read?
I've read about 500 cover to cover.
Mm-hmm.
In the last 10 years. So I probably averaged 50 books a year. I'm 29 now. Maybe I've been reading for a little bit less than 10 years. And so, yeah, about 500 books, many of them 5+ times each. So
yeah.
Maybe it's more reading sessions than just 500. Favorite books. I mean, I have so many favorite books from so many different times in my life. I'll share a couple. The first book that I read was Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki. And that book changed everything for me. Obviously, like we're having this conversation today as a result of my love for personal development books. And so when I read that book, Robert Kiyosaki said right in the beginning, money is not a subject that's taught at school. So not everybody is on an even playing field. Money is a subject that's taught in the home. Mm-hmm. And so if you grow up in a poor or middle class home, you are going to learn poor or middle class money habits. which is not fair because the rich kids growing up in the rich homes, they get to learn rich money habits. It's why there's consistent, well, one of many reasons that there's consistently a big gap between the ultra wealthy and everybody else.
Right.
And so if you want to learn rich money habits, you have to buy a book or buy a course or attend a lecture or go to an event, and you have to learn from a rich person. Mm-hmm. And so that's what that book taught me. Like, you can condense decades of information into days of reading. You can condense $1 million, billions of dollars worth of decisions into a $20 book, mm-hmm. and you can learn from them. And so I just went from insecure as far as money went to leading those conversations very quickly. So that book will talk about the importance of financial literacy. It will talk about passive income by investing in real estate. I've bought a couple of multifamily properties at this point because of that book. So I owe a lot to it. Mm-hmm. So that's book number one. I'll mention two more of my favorites. Number two is The 4-Hour Workweek by Tim Ferriss. Mm-hmm. One of my all-time favorite books. I mean, so many people read this book and they say it's not realistic, but I did my first solo travel trip to Argentina for 5 weeks by myself. I didn't know anybody in South America or speak any Spanish, but I read that Tim did it in the book and I wanted to try it out myself.
Yeah.
So that was cool. And as you know, over the last few years, my wife and I have traveled to 25 different countries, sometimes for up to 3 months at a time as a result of reading that book. And it also talks about how to build a remote business, how to automate, delegate, and eliminate low impact activities and only focused on highly leveraged energy bringing type of stuff. Mm-hmm. So I really owe a lot of the business that I have today and my lifestyle to that book. And then the third book I'll mention is one that I read for the first time last year. And then again, this year, $100 Million Offers by author Alex Hormozi. And I don't mind being transparent about this kind of stuff. Like, book thinkers, our average deal size a year and a half ago when I read the book for the first time was about $1,000 per client. Mm-hmm. And I was really looking for a way to 5 or 10x our average deal size. And so that's essentially the promise of that book, that people will spend more money and you can do more business. And so I read the book and I implemented everything, all the exercises, all of it, right into the business. And within a month, we started having $5,000 deals, $10,000 deals within a month.
Wow.
And so if anybody in your audience today has already started a service-based business and is looking for a way to blow it up, check out $100 Million Offers by Alex Hormozi. He's managing a portfolio of about $250 million in his mid-30s, but he speaks like a third grader. It's so cool. He takes these incredibly complex subjects and he distills them to a third grade reading level so that business becomes like, duh, you know what I mean? How do you make an offer so good that people can't say no? And he'll teach you how to do it. So it's really cool.
I'm about to buy that book when we finish up. That sounds awesome.
Yeah, it is. And I promise you, I'm not overhyping it.
Yeah. So tell me, you know, I understand that you're writing a book now. So tell me a little bit about this book that I believe is launching November of 2023. Is that correct?
Yep. So November of this year. And okay, the book title is Rise of the Reader: Strategies for Mastering Your Reading Habits and Applying What You Learn. I decided to write this book because over the years of running my community, which I mentioned before is around 150,000 readers now, over the years, I've received hundreds of messages that kind of look like this. Hey, Nick, appreciate the book recommendations. There's a lot of really good stuff in here, but I'm having a tough time turning the books that I'm reading into action. I'm having a tough time translating information into results. Like, how the heck do you implement the books you're reading?
Right.
And so every time I would answer one of those people, I felt like I was doing them a little bit of a disservice because, yeah, I'd jump on a quick Zoom call or send a couple of voice notes through IG DMs, but I knew I was doing more than what I was capable of communicating in such a short period of time. And I also knew a lot of what I was doing to implement these books was undefined. Like, I didn't have frameworks or strategies. I was just sort of doing it. And so I spent a couple of years, like, literally observing from a third party perspective, my own behavior. Like, mm-hmm. what am I doing differently when I read and implement these books. And so I decided to write a book on this subject because I knew that once I distilled all of the frameworks, once I observed my behavior and built it out, that other people would want to use it. And it would probably take a couple hundred pages for me to really explain everything. And I wish I was like Alex Hormozi and I could just instantly get to that third grade reading level, but it's a lot of work to simplify what's in your head. And so, yeah, it was a really difficult process. And that's what the book is supposed to do. It's supposed to help you take a book, implement a book, and get better action. Essentially close the gap between where you are and where you want to be by solving problems and improving skills.
And this may be impossible to answer, so feel free to say you can't. And I also don't want to spoil the book, but do you have the ability to kind of summarize it into like a key takeaway or two of like, you know, how do you get from where you are to where you want to go?
Yeah, let me give you a very specific example. And I'll preface this by saying that this is one of dozens of things that I teach in the book. I just did this little unboxing thing on Instagram, so I haven't read any of the books next to me yet, but I'll use this top one just as an example of what I do. Oftentimes, when I meet somebody, I'll say, hey, what are you reading? And they'll tell me. And then I'll say, why? And they'll be like, what do you mean, why? Well, why are you reading the book that you're reading? And people oftentimes, they don't have a good answer for that. So step one in my framework is to set an intention for each book that you read. And your intention, your goal for the book should follow the SMART goal framework. Mm-hmm. So it should be specific, measurable, actionable, attainable, written and relevant, and time bound. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just looking at this now. Amazon ads for authors. I think you know why I'm reading this one. Unlock your full advertising potential. So when I look at this, I want to build a goal. And it would sound something like this. Find and implement at least two strategies, Amazon advertising strategies, by the end of next week. Mm-hmm. So that's specific. It's measurable. I'm looking for at least two things to implement. It's attainable. Like, it's not $1 million by next week, but it's just find and implement two strategies.
Right.
It's actionable, obviously. It's relevant to my life. I'm going to write it on the inside cover, and I'll tell you why in a minute. Mm-hmm. And then it's time bound. I want to do it by the end of next week. And if you can add a little bit of extra flavor, you can add the word because. Make it a little bit more emotional because I'm releasing my very first book, Rise of the Reader, and I really want it to do well and positively impact people. And I know a necessary part of that process is Amazon advertising. Each and every time I open up the book to read a few pages, I'm going to have written that on the inside cover. Right. And so I'm going to tell my brain exactly what to filter for in the book so that I'm not reading without intention. I'm not aimlessly reading the book. I'm reading to find and implement at least two Amazon advertising strategies that I can implement by the end of next week. And so as I'm reading, I'll only highlight things directly related to that intention. And at the end of my reading experience, to avoid being overwhelmed, maybe I'll have found 20, maybe 15 different strategies that I could implement. So I'll write them all out. And then I'll look at what are the 20% of these that can drive 80% of the potential impact? Like, what of these strategies is the most important? Mm-hmm. And that's what I'll take action on. So it all starts, to kind of summarize, by setting a really good, really specific, measurable, actionable, attainable, written, relevant, time-bound intention for each book that we read. Otherwise, you're reading without intention. Who knows what you're supposed to take action on? I think this is kind of step one in the mm-hmm. equation.
Yeah, I think that's an awesome framework. And it really, as you were saying it just makes me think about, you know, being intentional in really every area of our lives is so incredibly important. And it's like, you know, if I'm being honest, I would have never thought about going into reading a book in that way. But there's zero doubt in my mind that going into a book with that framework, you're going to be able to actually take things from the book that you can then go apply to your life.
Yeah, absolutely. And I, you know, it could start even earlier in the process by defining what is the pain that you're looking to solve and then going in and finding the right book for it. you know, and then I talk about scheduling reading time into your calendar. So for anybody that's listening today, it's like, hey, I'm not a reader. Like, what's the point of this conversation? But you're still listening. Thank you for listening or watching. I love to say this to people who say that they're not readers. I love to say, hey, Jackson, if I could pay you $10,000 to read a book by the end of next week, do you think you could do it? And you'd be like, yeah, maybe I want it. Maybe I could read 2 or 3 or 5 or 10.
Yeah.
So for people that say yes, but they're not reading, it's a question of priority, right? Like, you prioritize the $10,000, so you're going to read the book, but you don't prioritize the book without the $10,000. So maybe you don't understand the value of reading these books, or maybe you don't think you have the time. Another thing that I like to tell people is that instead of trying to find time to read, you should replace lower impact activities with reading. And so I'm not a robot. Like, yes, I scroll on social media. Yes, I watch Netflix. But if you could just replace a little bit of those activities, maybe the first 15 minutes of your Netflix in the evening, or the first 15 minutes of your Instagram scrolling in the morning, just the first 15 minutes with reading a good book, 15 minutes in the morning, 15 minutes in the evening, 30 minutes a day, 5 days a week, that's about 100 pages a week. That's a book every 2.5 weeks or so. Yeah. I mean, you could read 20 books a year by 15 minutes twice a day. So it doesn't have to be this crazy thing where you sacrifice your social life or stop watching Netflix and become a robot or something. Like, you could still have fun and improve your life at the same time.
Yeah. So many people, you know, it's the start that stops a lot of people. And it's the idea, I think what you just hit the nail on the head, like, people think they have to go from not reading to reading an entire book in an evening. And I can speak from my own experience, like, prior to this year, 2023, like, I don't think I had read 5 books in the last 5 years. And this year, at the beginning of the year, I made a commitment to read, and I've read probably about a book a month, which for me, like, that's huge. And I've extracted tremendous value from spending some time reading. So yeah, for anybody listening, just one page, like, just start one page, one paragraph, like, just get started.
Yeah. And you're going to love $100 million offers, man. It's mind blowing how good that book is. And the author of that book, Alex Hormozi, he just put out his second book. It's called $100 million Leads. It's the second of 3 books in the process. So how to build a good offer, how to generate leads. And then eventually he'll talk about how to sell and close deals with his frameworks and stuff. But yeah, start with offers and then go to leads, which is also an insanely good book.
Yeah. Well, Nick, I always ask my guests, you know, if you had to leave the audience with one key takeaway from the conversation today, you know, one piece of advice, whether it's entrepreneurial, reading, whatever comes to your mind, what would that be?
The right book at the right time can change your life, especially if you use the strategies that I've discovered over the years of implementing books. So many of us think that our problems are unique to us. And in some ways they are, but the fact is 100 billion people have lived before us. And so many of those people have experienced very similar problems. And millions of those people have documented how they overcame those problems in the form of a book. And so these books can help you solve every problem that you deal with, because we're not as unique as we think we are. And, you know, experiencing pain and difficulty in your own life, it's a great opportunity for learning. But you can bypass a lot of that pain and sacrifice by reading about how other people overcame those things. And so no matter how niche, how unique, how special I thought my problems were, I found a good book to solve almost every single one of them. And it wasn't a lot of money, right? They're $20 a piece. You can read them in a few hours of time, broken up in 15-minute segments. And you don't have to experience the pain that you're currently experiencing. You can live up to your fullest potential by leveraging the experiences of other people. So that's the message, man. It's like, the right book at the right time can change your life by solving problems or helping you build the skill sets that you need to close the gap between where you are and where you want to be. And I've seen it happen hundreds of times, thousands of times. Like, I know this for a fact, and I want to scream it from the rooftops.
Yeah. I'm actually beyond impressed with how well strung together that was. It was beautifully put. And I mean, it's nothing but facts. So thank you so much. Yeah. Yeah, man. Thank you so much for joining me. I've really enjoyed the conversation.
Yeah. And I'll throw one last thing out there for your audience. If anybody wants a personalized book recommendation, like you don't even know where to start, DM me on Instagram at BookThinkers. I love nothing more than playing like a book matchmaker role. Tell me the problem you're dealing with. And I might ask some follow-up questions, but I will provide a book recommendation. And better yet, I'll follow up in a couple months with people and see if they've had a chance to read the book and hold them accountable to it and stuff. So yeah, that offers for anybody that watched or listened today. And appreciate you, man. Thank you for hosting a really cool conversation.
Absolutely. And just to confirm, that's at BookThinkers on Instagram?
Yes.
Are there any other places that people should, you know, look to get in touch? Obviously, you've got the podcast where people can listen to these conversations, but anywhere else you recommend?
The only other spot would be bookthinkers.com. It's spelled how it sounds. And on there, you could check out some of our services and get links to my book. You can get links to the podcast and everything in between.
Awesome. Well, yeah. Thanks, Nick. This has been a pleasure.
Thank you.
All right. And to the listeners, thank you guys for tuning in to another episode of the Walk On Mentality podcast. And we will see you on the next one.